Welcome, everybody, and great to have everyone on board. Guys, sorry about yesterday. We had a little bit of a mix-up and some technical problems going on, so didn't quite happen yesterday, but we're here today, and of course it's going on the recording, which means that everybody can listen to it afterwards, because I know I get a lot of emails and a lot of comment from people saying that they listen to the recording rather than the live event, because for us over here in Australia, of course, it's 12 o'clock midday, which doesn't always fit in with your work day and things like that. So great to be able to record them and have them up on the website there for everybody to listen to afterwards. Now, today, Larry has put in an apology. He's going to be a little bit late because of the change in day, so he may join us a little bit later, but of course we have Kathy. Are you there, Kathy?
I am. Hello.
Hey, hey. So tell me, Kathy, what's generally going on over there? What's the feel of the nation? What are people saying now that Buffett's come out and said that everybody should be investing in property? That's a bit of a turn up for the books.
Well, everything has changed, and I do want to let your network know that you were right on spot in getting into the U.S. when you did, and getting Australians over here, because some of those first people came out and bought at prices that you can't really get today. That's not to say that there aren't still fabulous deals. It's just that the world is waking up and more people are coming in. Our guest today may or may not be able to speak to this, but one of the things that has really changed the market is when Warren Buffett said he would buy a few hundred thousand, and he is, if he knew how to manage them. Other hedge funds and other Wall Street guys listened, and now they're buying hundreds, if not thousands, of homes every month. So, boy, the inventory levels are really low. Mm-hmm. It's very hard to get good deals, more important than ever. It's a time to have relationships with people like in our network and like our guest speaker today, because what they have to do to get good deals is probably not something that you or me or anyone who's listening would have the time to do. I mean, you've really got to know where to get the deals. You've got to sometimes put in hundreds of offers, and there's a lot of competition out there. So it's really comes down to a relationship business where, the guys in our network have had relationships with the REO brokers and with the banks, so they still are able to get inventory, but it's just harder than ever.
Yeah. And do you find that the foreclosure market is drying up a little bit?
Oh, absolutely. Foreclosures are down about half of what they were, but that's not to say it's over by any means. It's just not, you can't pick low-hanging fruit anymore. You got to climb halfway up the tree now. it's just a little bit more competition. And what that means is prices are going up.
Yeah.
Now, they're not going up. They're not pricing you out yet. The cash flows are still fantastic. Cap rates are still great. But prices are inching up.
Mm. And, whenever we see this in any market, anywhere around the world, whenever you start to see the inventory start to dry up, and we've been saying it for months, Kathy, it's going on right now. Well, it's starting to have an effect in the market, and that the prices are starting to move and things like that. So I've been telling everybody in this last tour that I did, if you're going to go to the US, you've got to get on your bike. There's no time to dilly-dally. You've got to get yourself over there and make it happen, because what we were doing, as you said, 2 years ago, can't do today.
Yeah, and the people who bought a couple of years ago, they may have, had normal issues that come with real estate, maybe an eviction here and there, or a tree falls on your house or whatever, but I'll tell you what, they're going to just not even care about those things anymore, because they've really made a lot of money. If they can just hold a little longer, they're going to be really glad they did.
So yeah,
that's the message to those who have already come out. I know a lot of people that have already come out or are coming back.
Yeah.
This fall. So I do want to emphasize what you just said. I would say probably the best buying opportunity is going to be this fall and winter, which is your summer, because that tends to be a slower time anyway.
Yeah.
So and then probably next spring and summer, it's going to be another bidding. It's going to be
bidding
craziness,
war.
Bidding wars, and all that. Yeah.
Now, Kathy, you're actually going to be out here very soon.
Well, it's going to be two of us. We're not sure who yet.
Either. Okay.
Either Ron, Jessica, or me, for sure. Jessica.
just for those guys who don't know, Jessica's off on her honeymoon now.
She is. She's in the Dominican Republic. She had a beautiful wedding. You know, the full deal with the 7 or 8 bridesmaids, groomsmen, huge cake. We had a Real Wealth Network table, and we were really loud. I think we embarrassed her. We were having a good time.
You want to send me some pictures?
Oh, absolutely. I will.
Now, we better get into this, because as you can see on the screen there, our feature town today is going to be city, is going to be Memphis. And last time I was over there in Memphis, I got picked up on a motorbike and driven back to New York on the back of a motorbike, and it was fabulous. I must say, I was picked up by my husband, not by just some random off the street.
Yeah, good thing you clarified that, yeah. And I was there with you, and I just couldn't believe that you fit everything you needed in the little backpack for the
2 weeks.
I was amazed, and you looked great every day with something different on. I still don't know how you did that.
Okay, Kathy, would you like to introduce our guest then from Memphis?
Yeah, absolutely. Now, Craig has, I've known him for a long time. He was working with a different team, and then branched out onto his own, and we were just very excited about that because we really liked him and wanted to work with him, but also wanted to give him time to get his company going, which he's done for over a year now on his own, and he works with lots and lots of Australians already. In fact, he's got quite a reputation in Australia, a good one, mind you. Just got back from there just 3 weeks or so ago because he's really got... He's in great demand for the properties and the deals he's able to find. So we're very excited to be able to introduce you to him and be able to see what he's got going on in Memphis.
Very good. Well, welcome, Craig.
Thank you guys both for having me on here. We're excited about all the opportunity that's going on with investing in Memphis. You know, Kathy spoke a little bit about where we broke back onto our own. I've been doing this the last 12 years, but over the last 3 years, I did have a partner, and to speak towards the hedge funds and all the Wall Street money coming in, Wall Street came in and made us an offer, and my partner decided to go with the Wall Street money and take it, and I wanted to remain, you know, kind of going on my own. So it's Kathy is speaking the truth when she tells you that Wall Street money is coming into these markets in a very big way, and I would say that is probably the biggest change that's happening United States, that the Wall Street money and hedge fund managers and all those guys have started to really realize that there are some truly great returns to be had in the real estate, not just in Memphis, but throughout the U.S. But Memphis is one of the main markets being targeted right now. And some of the things I want to go over tonight is just a little bit about me, my company, what I do. Then I'll also go over the Memphis market, why I think it makes it one of the best markets to invest in from a cash flow standpoint, capital appreciation standpoint, and just a lot of things I think will help, you know, make a really good investment. And when you include the currency exchange that I'm sure you guys are all aware of, it makes it really a unique time to invest in this.
Absolutely.
And I don't know can we advance? I don't know. Did you have a question?
No, I said absolutely. I was actually agreeing with you.
Oh yeah, most of our customers right now are coming out of California and New York, where they have some of the similar problems you guys have in Australia, where the fundamentals of real estate, as far as cash flow goes, they just don't work. Even though prices are down in markets like California and New York, they're still negatively geared usually when you buy a rental. So you know, most of our customers are still coming out of the California and New York market. But probably 30% of our business is Australian. And that's something that we've been doing probably the last 3.5 years. As soon as your currency got so strong, we've just had an overwhelming demand. And, you know, it's been really good. We've learned a lot over this. It was relatively new when we started. But we really enjoy working. The Australians are a lot like Americans. We kind of see eye to eye on a lot of things. And it's been a really good relationship.
Good. Well, let's talk about the Memphis market. You have a bit of a disclaimer there saying you're not giving tax advice and other bits and pieces. Tell us about you.
Well, about me. First, again, my name is Craig Denning. Now, I say I've been doing this the last 12 years, but really I've been doing it my entire life. My family, they never were full-time into real estate, but they always had rental properties. My family, we're just a bunch of real estate junkies. I grew up as a child painting rental houses, doing terrible tile jobs on the rental houses. It's always in the business. It's something I always just kind of knew I wanted to do. I majored in finance. And just kind of went into it, started buying rental property myself. And the way I started working with investors is I was buying rental properties, and then just by referral, some people referred me to some guys out of California where they couldn't buy real estate. And they started paying me fees to help them acquire real estate and then manage it and oversee the whole process. And that's kind of how it started. It was almost by dumb luck. I was in the, back when I started, it was the big model was to buy these homes, fix them up, and sell them to retail buyers, and just, the term's not popular, but flip them and make money that way. But when the market turned, I just started getting a steady influx of investors calling me, wanting me to work with them. And I embraced that, and we just started to let it grow and grow and grow. And now most of our business is referral business and repeat customers. One thing that we happened in January is I was invited to be the first franchisee in the U.S. of an Australian brand called Professional Realty Group. Are you familiar with them?
Absolutely. Yep.
Absolutely. Yeah, and in this market we're in, I'm sure as it's getting, when this first started, there were only a few people doing this, but as this has grown, it's hard to tell the guys that know what they're doing from the guys that are just ripping people off. Everybody can have a website, and unfortunately some of the worst guys have the best website. But I thought they had a very good name, and I wanted to continue. I don't think this is going to be a flash in the pan. Maybe Memphis won't always be the hot market, but I think the international, people investing across the ocean and everything else globally, I think that's here to stay with technology making the world small. So we together, and we've opened the first professional realty group brokerage here in Memphis, Tennessee, and they did it because of the demand they're getting, and that's something separate from you guys. They're seeing the demand, and they didn't know where to turn their people to. So, we love dealing with them. We like dealing with good groups like yourself as well, who are the good guys in this industry. It is a scary place out there on the internet, not knowing which guys are, the real players and which ones know what they're doing.
Mm-hmm.
But what we do is where turnkey gets used a lot, and it gets misused a lot. One thing, any home that we sell is a home that we have purchased. We go out, and like you alluded to earlier, we've been doing this 12 years. We know how to find the good deals. We go out and we buy these homes. We buy them from the courthouse steps. Some of the big REO, that stands for real estate owned, a lot of the foreclosure realtors in town, they'll call me first. I bought one just this afternoon. A realtor called me and said, "Craig, I got this house. I'm about to put it on the market. Go look at it before I put it on the market. Let me know if you want it."
Actually, Craig, could you actually go through the process in your state? Because it's a little bit different in other states, but just go through the process of what happens when a property goes into foreclosure and how it gets to the bank and then how you hear about it and what ends up at, public auctions and things like that.
Absolutely. Well, here's what happens. It all starts with somebody not paying the mortgage for whatever reason. That's how it starts. They start getting letters. It goes far enough to where the bank gives them a foreclosure notice. By law, they have to advertise it 4 times in a local paper that they're going to have an auction at the courthouse steps. Now, the mortgage company, they'll list the minimum bid for an auction to where they'll start the bidding. We'll go down there to the courthouse steps and we'll bid on it. A lot of times, the bank will bid it up and it won't sell at auction. That happens probably 95% of the time. And after the bank basically buys their note back at the courthouse steps, then it goes to be listed with some realtor in town. Some broker will have an agreement with a bank like Bank of America to list all their foreclosures. And what they'll do is they'll get a BPO, where a broker will go out there and give his opinion about what the value of the place should be. And a lot of these homes that we buy, especially after foreclosure, they have a lot of what we call deferred maintenance. So these homes, what's taken into account, not just the house and not just the neighborhood it's in, but the deferred maintenance. It's going to need a new roof, a new air conditioning, all that. They go through all that, and they come up with a value, and then it's listed. What happens when it goes to these listings, these attorneys, I mean, not the attorneys, the realtors a lot of times will know who the real players are in this market. And they know that they can sell it real quick to somebody like me. So a lot of times we're able to get some of the best properties in Memphis just because of our relationships we have with these realtors. Now, you know, maybe that's right, maybe it's wrong, but it's the way the world works. And we are able to get some of the best deals in Memphis. And that's the start of it, is finding
so
good
they
home.
They ring you even before they list it.
Yes, they do. And you know, they'll tell us they're about to list it. It happened, like I said, it happened to me this afternoon. And the reason they'll do that is because they know that I'll close it within 1 week. I'm not gonna ever put them. You know, we've just been doing it long enough and doing what we say we're gonna do long enough where they know they have a sale. And they also know the type of homes we look for and the areas we buy in. So we'll get calls, you know, before it hits the market. And, you know, I want to explain a little bit more about, before we get into this next stage, one of the main things we look at in Memphis is the neighborhood. You know, it's fine to get a cheap house. And Memphis is a lot like almost every city in the United States. I'd say every city in the United States. We do have our bad neighborhoods. We have neighborhoods where I probably wouldn't want the home if you gave it to me for free. And that can be said in almost every city in the United States. We try to walk a fine line. The neighborhoods we're investing in, they're probably not the neighborhood that I'm going to live in or you would probably want to live in. But it's also a neighborhood that I do want to manage, and I feel comfortable letting my wife go pick up rent. And it's that, you know, we walk along, we look for a neighborhood deal. We look for simple things. You know, people having flowers planted in their front yard, it sounds silly, but little things like that, it does two things. You got the neighbors looking after the house, number one. But number two, you get the capital appreciation when you get neighborhoods like this. You're going to make your money down the road whenever you do decide to exit these homes, selling them retail. You get in a low-end neighborhood, the only person you're ever going to sell that house to is another investor. And you know what the another investor is going to want. They're going to want the lowest price they can find. So we try to find neighborhoods where we feel like you're going to have a good ability to sell at retail whenever the market does, you know, totally pick up and the banks start lending to these retail markets. That's where the big turnaround will come, I believe.
Okay, Craig. Well, on the screen here, we've got a bit of a flow chart of questions and outcomes, which really kind of determine what type of property you're going to supply to people. Do you just want to run through that a little bit?
Yeah, I'll go through it. And basically, I created this just to kind of show, you know, I know it can seem like a daunting task, especially if it's your first time to ever invest across these. It can be a little scary. And I'm sure you guys kind of helped them with setting up their... Well, I don't know the answers. Do you guys help them?
Well, we put them with the people who can do it for them, definitely, yeah.
Right.
And tell them what they need to do, yeah.
Yeah, and what this is just, it goes through of what we start out with. You know, we kind of look at what their expectations are. You know, generally, I would say a cash-on-cash return of a typical property of ours is going to be somewhere 12 to 15%. Probably closer to 12 to 14% usually. We've all seen the $20,000, $30,000 piece of property in Detroit or wherever with the 17, 18, 19% returns. I can tell you, we don't have those. If I could get 17, 18% unleveraged, I'd probably not sell any homes at all and just keep them all. But we'd like to set realistic expectations. You know, what we want to do, we want to be able to deliver what we're offering. So we go over what their goals are, what they're trying to accomplish. And we go through that. What we do is when we talk to them about the time frames it's going to take. What we like to do is if we talk to them and their goals align with, you know, we think they should proceed on buying homes and we'd like to have the ability to buy homes, we go ahead and start establishing the bank accounts. You have your guys set them up with tax IDs and, you know, getting their LLCs and everything like that set up. We'll identify markets. And, you know, with this pathways thing I was actually making this for our professionals group. We're talking about other markets we're doing. But we just go over the different areas. We show them, we'll get the map and show them the neighborhoods of why we're buying, where we do buy. If I had a big map from Memphis, I could show you one of the areas we try to invest in. And I get a lot of questions about it. We try to invest close to the airport, which in most cities you wouldn't want to be near the airport. Usually, you know, not considered the best area. But in Memphis, our main industry is distribution. FedEx is our largest employer. They employ about 37,000 people in Memphis, and we try to go where the jobs are and get homes that are in close proximity to where, you know, where people can rent and be close to their job. So what we'll do is we'll go over to the neighborhood we're suggesting to them, telling them why we think it's good. We'll go over the house itself, kind of go over the renovations we do. If we do identify a house that they would like to buy, we send over a purchase and sale agreement. What we like to do after that is if they do want it, they agree with everything on the contract, we get $2,000. We call it earnest money. You guys call it a deposit. And we get that just to hold the property. And we're fine putting contingencies in, like due diligence. We definitely recommend getting a full property inspection report, termite letter, and all of that. And we're not in the business of making money trying to keep deposits. That's not why we're here. We do it just to take it off the market and everything else. If something doesn't pan out in the inspection report, I don't know if I've ever even kept earnest money ever in my life. We always give it back. That's not something that happens very much. At that stage, after we get the earnest money and we start proceeding to closing, we'll start getting instructions from our closing attorneys. After they'll need to get the information on your LLC, things like that. And our closing attorney, when it does come to closing date, the way we work is we email you over the closing docs. We have you guys sign them and then mail them or FedEx them back to us. And then they give you wiring instructions to wire the money back to us. After we've closed, we get the property management agreement in place. And I'd say probably 90% of the time, this home will already be rented by the time that you can close on it. We're having a huge demand for rentals here in Memphis. That's another thing that I'll go over a little later. It's making Memphis so strong. But we can almost always have this home rented and obviously renovated before you can even close on it. So we'll sign property management. Our management fee is 9%. And what we do after that, we would get a direct deposit form made. So what we like to do is when we collect rent, we like to deposit directly into your U.S. checking account. It's just not feasible. I mean, I guess it's possible we can do it, but I think it'd be cost prohibitive for us to either do an international wire each time or try to mail it internationally, a rent check each month. So what we're seeing most of our clients do, they're just letting it accumulate over here, actually. Build a U.S. checking account, let the money accumulate, and until the dollar swings back in our favor. And that's the strategy most of our clients take, and if they're able to. A lot of the guys need to get the money back to do whatever, to buy more homes, or just need it for anything else. But the strategy we're seeing most of our clients take is to set it over, let it sit in a checking account until maybe the Australian dollar weakens a little against the U.S. dollar. So how about you? Are you seeing a lot of the people doing the same thing with your clients? Are they tending to let their money accumulate over here in the U.S.?
It kind of depends on whether they want to go for extreme cash flow and use that as an income replacement strategy for back over here and have the money flow back through to Australia. Those that have borrowed money against homes and things over here in Australia are normally bringing back at least the interest payment that they have to make on their mortgages back over here, and perhaps leaving the rest in US dollars. I mean, we do have the facilities to be able to open bank accounts here in Australia with US dollar accounts, so we don't actually have to do the okay. exchange rate change. Simply, we can do that. We can still keep it in US dollars, but still have it in Australian banks if we want to.
Right. I'll tell you, you know, there's an interesting strategy that several of our clients have had. They've, you know, they buy property from me, but they also buy property in Australia. You know, in some of the really expensive markets, Florida markets are expensive compared to Memphis, but places like Sydney, Melbourne, Brisbane, where it's just really expensive. They're buying, they're continuing to buy real estate in Australia, but they're actually using some of our homes in Memphis as a hedge to help cash flow the negatively geared property in Australia. So
that's right. Yep.
We're seeing that quite a bit, more and more. So we've also had people in California do that a lot over the years. Kind of use this as a hedge with their other and that's always kind of interesting way to do it.
This graph here actually shows what's going on with the Aussie dollar to the US, and you can see we're very, very high. My personal belief is that we'll come back to around about that 80 to 85 cents in the dollar. It seems to be the traditional resting point. So we'll see what happens, but it's certainly something that we are all looking at right now. It makes it a good time for us to move our money into the US dollars and you know, and buy real estate over there. So
yeah, it's almost, you guys are getting an opportunity that we don't even have. Like I said, most of our customers are coming out of the US, and they're planning on capital appreciation to go along with cash flow. But I've heard the same opinions you have. I heard about 85 cents is where people think this thing will settle in. And the beauty of that is, if it goes back down to 85 cents, then you would be getting your rent in stronger U.S. dollars, which just really boosts the return and makes it just that much greater.
Well,
and,
basically,
I don't have a crystal ball. I don't know if that'll happen, but
basically, if the Australian dollar comes back to its 85-ish cents in the dollar, we'll be making 15% to 20%. Return on increase in yield on the properties, as well as increase in value on the properties, simply because of the exchange rate movement, and it's more likely to go down than up.
Yeah, I think so too. So it's really a really unique investment opportunity, especially when you consider, I think it's relatively safe to have, you know, usually to get those type of returns, you usually have to really get in some risky stuff. So these prices are pretty low, even though they have been going up over the last 6-7 months, you know, really going up a decent amount. I still think they have a ways to go up. They're still not near prices where they got to, so I think there's still a great opportunity for capital appreciation. But this next slide is just a little about Memphis, Tennessee. You've been there. Memphis is, most people all in Australia, all they know about Memphis is probably Elvis, if they know anything.
So, he made it famous.
Did you go to Graceland when you were there?
Of course I did. I did the tourist thing.
Well, that's great. Well, basically, what Memphis is known as in the United States, besides the home of the king, it's known as the distribution hub of the U.S. FedEx is the second largest distribution hub in the world. It just got overtaken by Hong Kong, but for years we were number one. We're now the second largest, but it's just an enormous amount of freight and packages and everything else that comes into Memphis, and then it's distributed by rail or trucking and everything else just all over the U.S. And, you know, Memphis, you've been there. Memphis is not a sexy town. We're not Miami. We're not Silicon Valley, but we're also not Detroit. We're a blue-collar town, and, you know, we have a really solid base of working-class people, which, you know, it's not glitzy and glamorous, but it makes for great fundamentals. We just have a huge base of the type of people you would want as renters. And that's just really what's pushed it. FedEx, like I said, they're our largest employer in Memphis, 37,000 people. not just FedEx. It's all the ancillary things that feed off the FedEx, big warehouses. There's 70, about 70 trucking companies are based in Memphis. We just have an incredible amount of distribution-related jobs, and that's really what drives drives the Memphis industry. Recently, Moody's rated Memphis as number one for property appreciation between 2011 and 2014. And why the what's, you know, that's great that it's ranked number one for property appreciation. But what I find interesting about that, the general rule in real estate was you could either pick an investment for capital appreciation or you could either pick cash flow. You can't pick both. And right now it's kind of a unique time. Is, you know, Memphis real estate is appreciating. It's going up. Going up a little faster than I would like it to almost now, because it's getting really hard to get deals. But usually you have to pick one or the other. And right now you can pick both. You can get good cash flow in homes that also have a really good have a good ability to go up in value. And that's really a unique thing that there's not many times in history in the U.S. you can say that you can do that. And that's something very unique right now.
Yeah.
Next thing is, Memphis does have a high population of renters. 45% to 48% of our population rents. I think the U.S. average is somewhere around 38% to 40%. So we're a little higher. We have a large population of renters, and people always ask me why that is. And one reason we've had it spike recently, I'm sure you guys have heard of our subprime loans and the stated income loans and all these adjustable rate mortgages. What we've had is Memphis really got hit hard. They're making loans to everybody. And under these stated income loans, you could go tell them, you just told them how much money you made, and they would approve you based on that without any verification. So what we had was we have a lot of people that had bought homes who have, over the last 3-4 years, lost those homes when the rates start adjusting. And what that means is these people who used to live in these homes and own these homes now become renters. And once you've lost your home, you probably can't get another home loan for 6 years or so. So I think what's going to happen, you know, after time passes another 4 or 5 years, there's going to be a big resurgence of people who now get qualified to buy a home again. I think that'll really push values up. But right now, we've seen a big spike in Memphis in the amount of renters, and it's largely based on the amount of people that got approved for these subprime loans and had them adjust and then went ahead and ended up losing their home.
Mm-hmm.
So we'll see how that plays out. Another little news article, U.S. News and World Report named Memphis number one city in America for real estate steals. It's the third largest railroad center. Another thing about Memphis, we're a huge medical area. And St. Jude is another one of the big employers in Memphis. It's a big children's cancer research park. It's really a pretty incredible place. It's one of the biggest philanthropies in the U.S. Where they research children's cancer, and it's just amazing. But a big part we have going, big growth industry we have going on in Memphis right now is the biotech center. We've built we've had a big push towards the biotech industry, and the reason they're doing that is because it feeds into a lot of these people with medical parts, medical devices, and biotech things. Time sensitive, they need to get to where they're going very quickly. And so, being in Memphis, if somebody needs an artificial heart, artificial hip, or some sort of medicine, there's nowhere in America they could be placed to get to where they're going faster. So we're getting a lot of biotech companies choosing to relocate in Memphis. This next slide that I have, it's a U.S. density. And the reason I show this, number one, if you put your cursor on Memphis, I don't know if you guys can see where that is. A lot of people don't realize how much more much of the population is on the eastern side of the U.S. Everybody knows about California, and there's a lot of population over there in some big cities. But the population of America is heavily weighted on the eastern side of the U.S. And what this means is that's why Memphis has such a unique area. We're within a 2-day trucking route to get to about 75% of the U.S. population. And if you'll, go to the next slide, if you would, for me. I'll show you, you know, why Memphis is kind of chosen for distribution. Can you forward the slide for me, please?
Yeah, it actually takes a couple of seconds before you see it. I've actually already done it, but it takes a little while for you to see it.
So travel all the way over here to Memphis.
That's it. Have you
there
got it
go.
Now?
There we go. What this shows, this kind of shows why Memphis is in such a strategic area. Memphis is home of about 70 trucking companies. But what these two rings indicate is the inner ring is a one-day trucking drive. The outer ring is a two-day trucking drive. So they can fly stuff in here, can come down the Mississippi River, can come in on rail, and it's all loaded onto trucks. And you probably noticed when you're in Memphis, there's just big trucks everywhere in Memphis, going down the interstate. And what it is, we can get to, within 2 days, we can get to 75% of the U.S. population. So that's kind of what makes Memphis kind of unique in where it is, and we think it's something that's, you know, sustainable and not very likely to go anywhere. There's not really any chance of FedEx moving. Their infrastructure is in the billions, what they put in there. The railroad lines all run through Memphis. The Mississippi River, hope's not going anywhere. Everything else plays to Memphis just kind of being in a real unique spot. And now here, we'll get to the nitty-gritty here and kind of show you some real-life examples of the type of properties we have. And like I said, what we do is this is a three-bedroom, two-bath house we have for sale, and we've actually just sold this one, but it's pretty common what we have for sale. We sold this property for $56,900 U.S. It rents for $850 a month. The annual property taxes are $1,200 a month. The insurance is $500 annually, and what that covers, it covers if there's any damage to the property, but it also covers if there's any liability. If somebody got hurt on the property, you'd have $1 million worth of coverage. I'm sure you've all heard that everybody sues everybody in America. I think that's been hyped up a little bit, but it's there are a lot of lawyers out there. Our management fee is 9%, and this would bring a monthly cash flow after you take out taxes, insurance, and management of $632 after the rent. So that'd be a return on investment of about 13%. But if you looked, if I had a video of this, and I have two videos, I don't know if you guys have them loaded up or not, but I have two videos. If you looked around this neighborhood, you would look around, all the grass would be trimmed, the hedges would be cut. We took this house and we put a new roof on it. There was heating and air. We ripped out the old heating and air. We put new in, new carpet. We try to get homes with hardwood. And one thing I will say that we do different than a lot of other companies is kind of the extent of our renovation. One of the main things we try to do, we try to go ahead and take care of everything and do it right on the front end. What I don't want to have happen is have you buy a house from me, and then 2 years down the road, I'm like, okay, we need a new roof now. It's going to be $5,000. Because inevitably, it'll come at the worst time of the month for you and everything else. We'd rather do everything right on the front end. We go ahead and rip the roof off, the heating and air, we'll take it out, put brand new in, put new carpet. If the electrical and plumbing needs updating, we'll take it out and get it up to modern code and get it all going and just make it to where if you do have a maintenance issue, it's going to be your standard, you know, landlord issue, a stopped up toilet, broken window, something like that, a little minor issue. What we don't want to have happen is have you 2 years in and having big expenses. So, you know, I get sometimes people ask me, hey, Craig, this other supplier has a house, you know, $6,000 less down the street. And I'll ask them, go ask the guy if he put a new roof on. Because if you don't want me to put a new roof on, I can certainly do that and charge you less money for the house. But we think it's better for everybody to know everything and, you know, just do it right on the front end. And that way there's not any big surprises going on down the road.
One of the things that I notice about the Memphis properties particularly is that their styles, the building style, is a lot more similar to what we have here in Australia. They're a little more, I guess, more what we're used to, I suppose, than some of the northern properties. The northern properties are very foreign in architecture, if you like.
They are. You know, we're lucky. A lot of our homes are brick. We're built on, as you guys call it, a slab foundation, where it's just like a monolithic yeah. flat concrete. We don't have basements. Up north, a lot of times we'll have basements, which are there's always a problem. They leak and everything else. We are lucky in Memphis. We have very simple structured homes. They're usually brick. A lot of them have timber floors, which is nice. It saves you from replacing carpet. And, yeah, it is very similar to what you're used to in Australia. I've noticed that myself. That's it. And it's very similar to what you guys are used to. And I would say it is an advantage to some of the stuff we see up north where the house will be made of timber and things like that. You don't have the light expectancy up there.
Okay, so what's this property here? Is another one?
It's another house. Yeah, and this one is timber house, but it's a newer house. This one was built in 1989. And as you'll see, the numbers are very, very similar. This house was built in 1989. It's a 3-bedroom, 2-bath. And that's one thing you'll never see us buy. We'll never buy a 2-bedroom house. I don't care how good of a neighborhood it's in, how good of a deal it is. I just don't do it. It just limits your rental pool too much. The house is built in 1989. We're selling this one for $59,900. Probably at the heat of the market, this house is probably going for about $85,000 to $90,000. So we're still down quite a bit percentage-wise. This house did rent for $850 a month. Taxes annually are $1,370. Insurance $500. Our management fee, again, is 9%. This leaves monthly cash flow of $617. With the ROI of 12%. One thing I haven't hit on yet, we do have some access to some private financing, so I can kind of go over some of the terms of what that is and how that can be utilized. I will preface this by saying this is not my money, this is private money. It's located by some private investors here in Memphis, and the rates can be a little high. So basically what they're doing, they're getting 50% down payment on these homes. On a house like this, you'd roughly have a $30,000 down payment. They're amortizing it from between 5 to 7 years, which means it's paid off in 5 to 7 years. It's not a balloon or anything else. It means it's straight, completely paid off in 5 to 7 years. The interest rate is 9.75, and they charge, I think, 5% loan origination fee. So it's a pretty costly loan. I would think if you can get some financing over there, you're probably going to find more favorable terms, but it is available. The terms can be a little high, but I do want you to know it's out there if somebody was interested in that.
So just amortize, say, over, what did you say, 7 years?
7 years. It makes cash flow very tight. When you're paying something off in 7 years, it makes cash flow very tight. But what I would say, the good news is that a very large portion of each payment is going towards principal reduction and not interest, which is something I'm sure we've all looked at a 30-year mortgage and seen how little goes to principal reduction on each payment. So you are on a short amortization, the cash flow may be tight, but it's almost like a forced savings. So much of it is going to paying down principal reduction.
I mean, for somebody who wanted to, make their money go further and buy more property, it's still worth it, particularly if you didn't need the cash flow back here. If you were, say you had a 5-year plan or a 6 or 7 year plan where you want to continue to work, live off your salary, etc., over here, or your business or whatever, and then use your money into properties like this, well, basically you'd buy double. You'd pay it off in the 7 years, and you'd get the appreciation, obviously, on double the amount of property rather than paying cash for it.
That's right, and there's also no prepayment penalty. So if you do decide, 3 years into it, and you have access to some cheaper money, and you want to pay it off early, there's no prepayment penalty. Mm-hmm. Paid it off before the loan is expired.
Yeah, I mean, on those kind of figures, you'd probably, if you threw all of the cash flow at it, you'd actually pay it off a little bit sooner than the 7 years.
Yeah.
Yeah. Cool, okay. So how long does that take to organize the financing?
the financing, we can have it organized in just a matter of, you know, probably once we have a very simple loan application. It's about a two-page form. It's very easy to do. We can have it approved in a week. And then, you know, we can...
And the management...
We can have that closed as soon as you can have, as soon as you're ready, as soon as, within a week, we can have it done.
It's and
easy process to get that done.
The management of the properties, you handle all of that?
Yes.
And how many people have you got on your team there?
Well, we've partnered up. We've got total probably about 14 people doing that.
14, did you say?
Yeah. In the office doing the management.
Okay. And do you have many vacancies? I mean, what kind of vacancy rate would you have to put on your properties as an estimate?
Our vacancy rate is running right at about 6.5% right now.
Okay. And if you did happen to lose a tenant, how long does it normally take to replace them with another one?
We generally can have somebody in there within 45 days. And the reason it takes 45 days is we always try to start our leases on the first of the month. So if somebody moves out, it might take us a week to get it repainted and cleaned up a little. And just the normal alignment of getting somebody in on the first. So generally 45 days is about how long it would take.
Okay. And do you don't charge a letting fee or anything to get a new tenant in place?
Well, here's the deal. We charge the first month's rent if the house, like I said, usually when we sell a house, we already have the house rented. And if the house is rented when they buy the house from us, then we don't charge any fee. The reason I don't do that is because I would have been collecting the rent, so there's no reason to charge you guys for it. And a lot of guys that buy homes from us, they tell us, we want to put it in the offer. We don't want to close on it until it's rented. Not just to save them a letting fee, but just to make sure the house actually rents for what we said it would rent for. So
yeah.
We get that asked of us a lot, and we have no problem with that. But going forward, if the house, let's say the house goes vacant, first of all, if it goes vacant in the first 12 months, then there is no re-letting fee. We don't charge it. We feel like, even if we did everything right and somebody did, you know, something happened, they had to move out, it's not your fault. And, you know, we try not to add insult to injury by trying to charge another letting fee. But on a regular year going forward, it's a one-month letting fee. We try to always sign two-year leases. I'd say probably 80% of the leases we sign now are two-year leases. And I'd say an average time of a tenant is that averaging staying with us is about 2.5 years.
So the average that tenants stay is 2.5 years, did you say?
Yes.
Yeah, okay. Okay, well, that's good. Is there anything else you'd like to tell the guys?
No, that's about it. You know, I'll kind of go back to how we started this. You know, this Memphis has been, you know, as just known throughout the U.S. and getting known throughout Australia as one of the best cash flow and stable markets. At this price point, it's hard to find good, solid neighborhoods. And there's some YouTube videos that I sent over to you. You can not show them here, but if you could send them to some of your clients, it'd be great. One thing I really want to reiterate, and if you came to Memphis, you probably have seen it. The main thing that I get communicated to me with people from Australia who go up north and go to a lot of different areas. There's a lot of areas where you can buy $50,000 and $60,000 homes in the U.S. But the main comments I get is, boy, these neighborhoods sure feel a lot like nicer neighborhoods than some of these other markets we're in. So we just think for the Memphis, the $50,000 to $65,000 home, you're really getting a good value. You're getting a solid little neighborhood that's got some capital appreciation, good management. We've been doing this long enough, so we know what we're doing. And, you know, if you ever have any questions about specific health, we'll be distributing properties for you guys to look at. And if you ever want to have a Skype call, I've gotten very used to having Skype calls at all hours of the night. It's almost 10 o'clock here right now. So, you know, I've learned to do business with Australians. My busy time gets to be about Sunday afternoon is when my phone's first ringing off the hook. So we're used to it, and we welcome Skype calls if people want to, you know, have a talk with us before they invest their hard and earned money.
Yeah, that's fair enough too. Well, thank you so much, Craig, for coming on and sharing your side of the world over there and what you've got. And as I say, the properties are very similar to a lot of the stuff that we do have here, but the price point obviously is very, very different. And the yields are very different as well. And I can't reiterate it enough, guys. If you're there, the U.S. is calling, and get on your bike because things are moving. And I don't have a crystal ball either as to how long they're going to last for. But obviously there'll always be deals there. But certainly with what we've been seeing in the past, we need to get on our bike and we need to make things happen sooner rather than later. Kathy, are you still there?
I am.
Do you have anything you'd like to say to the guys before we finish up for today?
Well, you need to stay an extra day, try to travel on a Friday, get tour on a Friday so you can stay Friday night and enjoy Beale Street.
That's exactly right.
Saturday night too.
Or better still, come Thursday.
Yeah, there you go. Yeah, so, you know, we're doing our best to, I must say that our teams, like Craig, they've been really loyal to us because they could sell out to the hedge funds and to Wall Street, but a lot of them are not because they know that that's short-lived and they would lose us, you know, and we're here for the long haul. So they have kind of decided to turn down those guys and commit to us, so that means a lot. And we have them out there still working for us to find these deals before Wall Street gets them.
That's exactly right. Kathy, there's a question here that's come through about the tours. And the question is, when is the next one to the U.S.? Do you just want to explain the whole tour process for everyone?
Yeah, I would love to. The first thing you need to do is fill out the international investor form so that we know what you're looking for and when you hope to come and what you're wanting to achieve. And then you would book an appointment with Jessica to make sure that you've got everything in order for your trip. So you've got your LLC, you've got all the forms you need for the banking to open your bank account in advance, that you bring all the right items. And then also, if you're hoping to get financing, it's best to apply before you come, get all your documents in so that when you find the property of your dreams, you can just go ahead and get that loan going rather than, you know, start from scratch when you're here. So there's a lot you need to do before you come. We still have people just showing up, and we really don't recommend that because we can't do a lot for you if you just show up without having all the preparation done in advance.
Yeah.
So you could go on the Cashflow USA website, and there's a tour section, and that will take you. You click on it, it will take you right to the investor form to fill out, and it will go through that whole process. Once you have spoken with Jessica and she's gone over your goals and where you want to visit and what might be the right city for you, and also she's going to gauge it on inventory. Like, it may be that Craig is out of inventory, has no houses to sell when you come to the U.S., so she'll want to make sure that you visit a city that, you know, hasn't had a large group of investors come and take everything. And I do mean that seriously, that can be a problem. So when she determines what is the best market for you, or maybe the best three or four for you to come visit, then she will set you up with our tour coordinator, Tyler, who we hired especially for you guys. So he's there just to coordinate all the details and set up your tour with the affiliates, make sure you have everything you need, know where you're going to stay and all that, all the details he'll coordinate. And he'll try to set you up with somebody else who's coming about the same time. So if you are somebody who's coming with $1 million and you want to go alone on tour because you're planning on buying a lot, then Tyler would set you up for your own personal tour. But if you're really coming, you're just going to buy one or two homes and you would like to travel with other people, then that would be what we would set you up, that Tyler would set you up to do. So it's all become very personalized. We used to do, as you know, we used to do tours where we would determine where you go, and it would be 1 week out of the month, and you had to sort of just do what the tour did. And we listened to the tour attendees who said it was just too much. Some people didn't want to go to all those cities, and they didn't like having a big crowd. So we've really catered it more to you and your needs, and it's a lot more work for us, but we're getting a lot better feedback.
Very good. And Glennis has written in a few questions here about the other areas, about stock and things like that. I mean, that's something that is gauged. It could be a lot today and none tomorrow, basically. And Jessica and the guys are on top of that. So really what we need to do is to contact Jessica, I guess, really have that meeting and organize to get over there.
Yeah, it's really hard. It's really hard. It's a balancing act for us because, one example is, our Chicago guys who are fabulous, they're really great. They're too great. All of our teams are so great that everybody else wants them too. And they had a group. One guy came out and bought 300 houses from them. And, so when they know that you're coming, they'll save some for you. So that's why we just really, it takes a lot of organization on our part to make sure that when you arrive, you're going somewhere where there's already inventory. What we were thinking about doing, and I know you don't like this. I know you've never wanted to do this. We are going to start profiling available properties online so that, if people just can't get here or can't, they just don't want to end up arriving in the U.S. and not having as much to pick from, allowing a situation like that. So it's interesting times. So I'll tell you, I really thought it would be, 3 to 5 years before recovery happened, but it's happening faster.
Yeah. Another question here, Christina's written in and said, this one here is really, I guess, to Craig. She already has properties in Memphis. Would you consider taking over the management on them?
Yes, I would always consider taking over management. I'd like to see where they are. And the reason I say that, I always want to try to help everybody and do everything I can. I get what I get asked for more than anything. Is for people calling me going, Craig, I want to buy a $35,000 house. It's not that I can't get them for people, but I sure get them a $35,000 house. The reason I don't usually do them is because I don't want to manage. It's not the market I like to deal in. But what I will do, and I'm not saying that's what those homes are by any means. That's not at all what I'm getting at. But I'd like to see what they are. And if it's an area that maybe I don't want to manage, I know people that are really actually better than I am at managing some of the lower end properties. I'm not assuming anything about the properties, but yeah, more than likely I'd be more than happy to take them over.
Okay. And Glennis still wants to know, do we have to go to the U.S. to open up a bank account? Well, there are other ways around it, but they end up being sub-accounts as opposed to actual accounts. So, yes, I mean, you've got to go and have a look at the place anyway. And Kathy and the team there, they organize with Bank of America to be able to get all of the accounts set up exactly the way that you need them set up with the credit cards and everything else that needs to happen. So it's much, much better just to leave it till you're over there. That's first point of call, get all that stuff organized, and then, off you go on your tour. Brett has written in and he said he's obviously been over there a couple of years ago or earlier, and he's bought some properties through Hewlett, and is Hewlett no longer on the team?
No, he is not, although it really came down to, it's not so much that we didn't like him or his properties. He just, the best way to put it is that he had so much demand from Americans that it was just ended up being too much
too hard to deal with the Australians.
That's what it was.
Okay. That's okay. It's all yeah. Good. I mean, there are extra difficulties dealing with us, and I think people need to understand that it's much easier for the guys in the US to deal with US people than it is for us to deal with us, because we've got time frame differences and, I guess, to some extent, personality differences and all sorts of things. So, you know,
well, I think at the time there was such a focus on cap rate, mm-hmm. and the initial Australian groups that were coming were just really wanting maybe something that was too hard for Hewlett to get at, you know, over 12% returns. He just couldn't do it. So he felt like it was maybe a waste of everybody's time. Mm-hmm. But I think now we're going to see, you just have to know we're going to see lower cap rates because prices are going up.
Yeah.
So cap rates are going to go down.
Yep.
That's how it works.
Tracy's written in and said, if we have a bank account previously, is it easier to get a new one? I don't think so, because it's pretty easy to get a new one anyway. If you've got a previous social security number, that would help.
Mm-hmm, yes.
But I think it's pretty straightforward anyway, so, you know, great if you've had, but no biggie. And Christina wants to know, Craig, how can she get in contact with you about her existing properties? Have you got an email address there?
You know, I think the best thing now, because we don't want to bombard Craig yet, we really want to screen people first. So
okay.
Just send it over to us. You could send it to info@realwealthnetwork.com. And, you know, and just in general, we really want our affiliate teams to be able to do what they do best, which is go get good properties, fix them up, get them rented, and hand them over to us. So any basic questions, general questions, investing questions, you know, send them to us. So that we don't bog them down.
Very good. And,
yeah. Okay.
Okay, Craig, well, thank you so much again for being on the line, and to Kathy as always. And my apologies again about our technical difficulties yesterday. But we'll be back again to talk to everybody in a month's time, the last Tuesday of the month at 12 o'clock midday. So thank you again, guys, and we'll catch you again next time. And I'll see you over there when I make it to Memphis again, Craig.
We can't wait. We're excited. We'll go out to Bill Street.
Okay. Talk to you soon, guys.
All right.
Bye for now.
Take care.
Bye-bye.
Bye.